Prepare yourselves, Bucs fans. Unleashed from the corporate shackles of the Tampa Tribune, Tampa Bay's only Pro Football Hall of Fame voter is finally free to speak his mind. That's Ira Kaufman, the custodian of Canton himself. The Ira Kaufman podcast is presented exclusively by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa on Fletcher, just west of 275, and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, Brandon's only luxury dealership. The best ever summer sale event is on now at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Turn up the volume, put up your feet. The Ira Kaufman podcast is on at JoeBucksFan.com.
So great to be back for another Ira Kaufman podcast with the custodian of Canton who returns from Canton. And of course, so many of you here on JoeBucksFan.com read his column with impressions from the event and some really neat stuff there, Ira. I enjoyed just getting the feel of everyone shutting up when Jim Brown appears, you know, servers standing in their tracks with their drinks. I like that. But you've got a lot more that you saw up in Canton, and it's good to have you back. And how are you, man?
I'm good, man. You know, Joe, the best part of the trip for me, perhaps, was getting on a plane Sunday morning and not staying over for that debacle of a game that wasn't a game Sunday evening. I couldn't believe what happened. Another black eye, Joe, for the NFL. And, boy, the hits just keep coming for that league.
You know, as I put out on Twitter, Ira, you just know that Bill Belichick is going to find a way to use that paint this year. Somehow, some way, on some field or on some ball, he's going to use that cement-like paint that cost them a game.
You know, there's famous stories. I heard a few this week from some of the writers in Canton because Stabler was getting inducted and some of the guys that covered the Raiders, and we were talking about Al Davis, a great legendary figure in pro football history. And he would water down the field at times, Steve. He would also bug, allegedly, locker rooms. So there were some great stories about the Raiders and the rivals, the Chiefs in the 60s. But, you know, Steve, it was a fun time in Canton. I got to work the crowd a little bit before Saturday night's festivities. And I've got to tell you, from a Buck perspective, it was very disappointing. And by that I mean you saw blue everywhere, Colts blue. You saw Colts executives. You saw Colts players. You saw people that worked in the building in Indianapolis during Dungy's 7 years. Irsay, of course, was around. And then you looked for Buck presence, and there wasn't a lot to be noted. Steve, you had two co-chairmen, the Glazers. Brian Ford came. Some players, Lynch, Barber, Gruber, Sapp and Brooks on the stage, of course. But that was about it from a Buck perspective. And Steve, I just think it's a shame that the first coach that the Glazers ever hired turns out to be a Hall of Fame coach, something that you should really be bursting with pride about. A guy who turned around a sad sack franchise that was a weekly joke on the Johnny Carson Tonight Show. A man who needed less than 1 year to return the Bucks to relevance. And all you saw was Colts perspective, really.
When you say perspective, are you talking about as far as jerseys and just sort of the feel around town?
Well, or Steve, it even goes beyond the Saturday night ceremony. I was looking at Dungy's locker. There's a Hall of Fame locker, and it was filled with Colts memorabilia. Now, look, we're big boys here. He won a Super Bowl in Indianapolis. In historic style, becoming the first African-American coach to win a Super Bowl. And you and I both understand that. And he had a better record with the Colts, primarily because he had Peyton Manning under center and was smart enough not to mess with that offense. But, Steve, I would argue, and I did make this argument in the Hall of Fame room, Dungy's best work came in Tampa. The Colts were ready when he joined them. They were not ready in 1996 when he joined the Bucks. I just got the impression, Steve, 3 days in Canton, I saw a lot of fans walking around Canton with Colt jerseys Not nearly as many as the Favre Packer jerseys, but you and I understand that. Favre dominated that weekend.
And he was a player.
And he was a player, just like Jerome Bettis, to a certain extent, dominated the year before in Canton with Steeler Nation. We understand that. But I saw a lot more Colts jerseys than I saw Buck jerseys. And I just thought, in retrospect, it was a little bit of a sad feeling.
Yeah, I'm getting a good picture of it, and I have to say this, Ira. There wasn't much, being around town and being plugged into the media as we are here on JoeBucksFan.com, there wasn't much of a groundswell of excitement for Dungy going in. I don't recall reading about any sort of, hey, buy this package tour to go see Dungy get in the Hall of Fame. Nobody approached me with, hey, can you promote this tour we're doing to take people up to Canton? That vibe just wasn't there. And when you do think back, of course, we were here. We remember 15 years ago, 18, 19 years ago, how beloved Dungy was in this town, could do no wrong, was the guy who resurrected the franchise, a guy who's still here, still an icon in the community. It's a little bit sad to hear you saying that. I think some of it might be a function of course, Indianapolis is more of a driving distance from Canton. I'm not sure exactly how far it is, but right. Certainly a lot closer than Tampa. But that is disturbing for the people who love Dungy and the so many who associate him with, hey, he's in the Hall and he's one of us.
You make an interesting point, Joe, about the lack of local buzz to an extent about Dungy's candidacy and his induction. For example, this is absolutely aligns with what you were just saying. I was there, and I believe only one local TV crew went up to Canton. That was Bay News 9. Catherine Smith used to be my comrade at the Tampa Tribune, covered the Bucks during Dungy's years. She went up there with the cameraman. I looked around. I didn't see Fox. I didn't see Channel 10. I didn't see Action News, and I didn't see FLA, all of whom I think if there was a player, you know, the Sapp and Brooks, I'm trying to contrast it to, perhaps if we're lucky enough to get Lynch in 2017, that would change for a player. But one camera crew, Steve, from Tampa, to honor Dungy's induction.
Yeah, it's not a lot if you really think about it. When you look at the size of this market, a top 12 TV market, I believe it is now. It's telling. I'm not sure what it says, but it's telling. And you know, of course, he left here on some terms that left a sour taste in some people's mouths. Maybe they didn't feel like, maybe they lost a little bit of connection because of that. And you referenced in your column, I forgot the adjective noun you used, but there was some lingering resentment about Dungy's exit from Tampa. We got some inquiry from readers here on JoeBucksFan.com. Was that sort of just in the close knit people around Dungy were talking about that exit? Was it just a vibe from Dungy himself, or where were you picking this up?
I think it's common knowledge, Steve. And it goes beyond the Dungy family. I believe Dungy's wife still has not forgiven the organization for. It's about the way it happened, Steve. You know,
sure.
not that a coach after 6 years gets fired after, let's be honest, two miserable playoff performances back to back. Nobody can argue that. Drab, listless playoff performances.
Absolutely. And in retrospect, of course, it was the right move, winning a Super Bowl the next year.
But it's the the perceived subterfuge or the actual subterfuge that surrounded Dungy's exit, his dismissal. A lot of people in NFL circles, executives, maybe other coaches, agents, the Parcells angle really frustrated and disappointed a lot of people about the secrecy and the mystery. About the contact with Parcells while Dungy was still coach. It still rankles people to this day, certainly rankles people within Dungy's circles. And that's never going to go away, Steve. It's just not. And then he's on the street for a few days and gets a call from Jim Irsay saying, we can't wait to get you here in Indy, and then wins a Super Bowl. and Gruden coming in and winning a Super Bowl. It's a combustible mix, Steve. It is what it is. But you know what I noticed, and I thought, and I pointed this out, and I noticed it right away in Dungy's remarks. It just reinforced something that I think you and I already knew. Malcolm Glazer, the late Malcolm Glazer, had a very strong bond with Tony Dungy. It survives to this day. I remember I did not go to the funeral for Dungy's son, but people talk about the embrace between Tony Dungy that day before the service and Malcolm Glazer. It was long. It was emotional. People still talk about it that were there. Dungy has a special place in his heart for Malcolm Glazer. That's also never going to go away. But let me note that Malcolm Glazer was alive when Tony Dungy got dismissed.
Oh, of course. Of course. And of course, he was a big part of that. He was still running the franchise as at that time. I had heard from somebody in the know a couple of years ago that actually Dungy was one of the very few people who was permitted to see Malcolm Glazer in his later years.
I believe that is true.
When he wasn't out in public and you know, and that happened, on a whenever Tony wanted to, and there was a desire.
And Malcolm
there.
Would go to an occasional Buck game, very rarely.
Sure.
But when he did, perhaps Dungy saw him then too.
Sure, of course. Well, to lighten it up a little bit now, you've got work to do for this year coming up with
we call it unfinished business.
Unfinished
Steven.
Business. John Lynch, he's got his best shot this year. I think that's fair to say. The way you Hall of Fame guys work your politics and your magic, and the numbers look good on paper for him as far as players and him maybe being a finalist this past year. If you can give it now, this is August, and I think a lot of fans don't realize that your presentation of Lynch, even though you've made it before, how many times now? Twice?
At least twice, maybe three times.
Your presentation of Lynch remains unfinished business. It doesn't stop with what you've already done previously. You don't just whip out the canned speech. You're constantly researching, constantly adding to that time. Maybe you can talk a little bit about what you're doing this year already and coming up to make the case for John Lynch again with something new and something different.
Steve, you're reading my mind, because that's part of the reason I really wanted to make this trip to Canton, not only to honor Dungy after making the presentation for Dungy, but to gather some more material about John Lynch. Now, look, you're absolutely right. I throw out last year's speech and I start anew. I had a great quote from Barry Sanders that the Bucks actually helped me get, sort of like John Lynch occupied a place in your mind as a player. That was very powerful, especially coming from Barry Sanders, who's not known for hyperbole and not even known for talking very much. So, you know, for the fans out there that are listening to this, Steve, in terms of the presentation, everybody knows what Rondé Barber is going to say about John Lynch. So for the 46 of us that are around that table, that doesn't carry too much weight. And you know, also for the guy from the Rams that is presenting, Kevin Green, or whatever, I don't want to hear about a Ram teammate. I know what he's going to say about Kevin Green. I want to know about the people that faced Kevin Green. So I corralled Mike Holmgren Friday night before the DeBartolo party, which was quite a bash, Steve. $1 million bash. And I grabbed him at the bar and I said, "Mike, I need you for a minute. What's up?" I told him, you know, third or fourth time around for John Lynch, this has got to be the year. He said that should be a no-brainer, Lynch. He gave me a few things about Lynch and how they had to game plan him. We had to know where John Lynch was on the field. That was one of our pregame top priorities. Lynch, 47, where is he? Then, of course, he went on to Denver. So, Steve, I'm looking for more hooks. I'm looking for more quotes, maybe a Tony Gonzalez this time around. I tried Jerry Rice. I tried to grab him during the party. He was having too much fun, Steve. He didn't want to bother with me. He had three women.
So wait a minute. Did you ask him to dance, or how does this go?
He had three. He was behind a rope. He had his own little cave over there, the Rice Cave. I looked. I saw Charles Haley sitting there. I looked twice. I saw Paul Anka sitting there. Paul Anka's a big friend of DeBartolo's. He was in the Jerry Rice Cave. I believe there were also a few young ladies in the Jerry Rice Cave. That doesn't surprise anybody. And when I tried to get his attention, he said, "I'm busy, man. I'm busy." So that's a story for another time. But I feel good about Lynch because, as you said, this is the big one, 2017. Why? Well, it's not a star-studded class of first-time eligibles. The headliner will be LaDainian Tomlinson. Great player, not Brett Favre, but great. And I fully expect, and I think you do too, he's going to get in.
Oh, of course.
First year.
Of course.
It's LaDainian Tomlinson. Then you've got a couple of other people like Brian Dawkins, first-timer. I don't think he'll fly right past John Lynch.
No.
This is not Ed Reed. Great player, but it's not Ed Reed. Couple of other people. Hines Ward, doesn't jump out at you. This is not Jerry Rice. Very good player, though. But the holdovers, Steve, that's the key. The holdovers that made that final 10, just like Lynch, and didn't make the final 5. Kurt Warner. In talking to my fellow scribes that were up in Canton, and there were about 10 selectors up there, there's a consensus that Kurt Warner's getting in. It's time for Kurt Warner. I don't have a problem with that.
Well, I'd cut you off. Did Atwater get in last year? I don't remember.
Atwater did not
get any traction, and he's behind Lynch. So he's behind Lynch because he was a semifinalist this year.
Semifinalist, and I expect him to be in the room again. But he did not make the 10, and Lynch did. Lynch is ahead of him.
Now, you think that something like that could flip-flop? Because obviously they played the same position, similar kind of impact.
Normally they don't flip-flop, Steve. Lynch made progress. Lynch is on the doorstep, and 2017's his time because, Steve, 2018 going to be a big class with Ray Lewis, Urlacher, Randy Moss.
And Barber's going to hurt him. Barber's going to hurt him in that's right.
That
Tampa vote, the way people think of that stuff. Now, two quick questions. Did you talk to Lynch? Did you get anything more from him?
I talked to Lynch. More importantly, I talked to the Glazers. I got a few minutes with the Glazers before the ceremony started.
Did they buy you, pick up your bar tab?
No. This was at the stadium.
This was not
at the DeBartolo dinner. Brian Ford was with them, the COO, and they put the full court press on me, Steve. I'm used to it. I'm a big boy. You got to get 47 in next year. That's the message loud and clear. Now he's going in the Ring of Honor this year. It would be a nice bookend to it. In February, for them to announce that he's part of the class of 2017. The Glazers are all in on John Lynch. And, of course, when Rondé's time comes, it'll be the same thing.
Absolutely. Now, did you ask Lynch about Bradley McDougal? Did you talk Bucks, or was he?
Didn't have enough time, but I did get enough out of Lynch to say that he's re-upped with Fox. He had some other offers.
Nice.
He is a rising star, Joe, in his profession. I think he has come a long, long way from his first year. He's now one of the better analysts on television.
He's very good. Rondé's very good as well. I mean,
Rondé's come a long way, too.
Good.
He was very raw at the start. These guys are dedicated to their craft, and you realize why they were such great players, because that narrow focus.
And leaders, because I think in many ways, if you can present on television in a condensed, clear manner, that speaks to how well you can present in a condensed, clear manner when you're talking to a teammate or trying to get through to a rookie. It's communication with people, and it's a natural for them.
But. And they've both made a lot of progress, Steve, in what I think is the number one toughest assignment in this job is to be able to criticize a player that made a mistake without being overbearing. There's a natural tendency not to try to criticize a player when you've been a former player. You don't want to do it. But there's a way to do it constructively. You don't demean the guy, but you point out he blew that assignment. And I think Lynch and Barber have learned that.
Now, I hope everyone, I've got one more question for you, Ira. And I hope everyone is enjoying the Ira Kaufman podcast brought to you by Edmore's Cadillac Tampa and Edmore's Cadillac Brandon. Check out their websites. A lot of great summer deals going on.
I'm wearing their shirt as we speak.
Yeah, so you look good in red. And you know, Ed Morse, 70 years of Ed Morse, cannot beat the service. And it's where I buy my vehicles. Now, were there any interesting Buccaneers there for Dungy? You know, guys that maybe from the past who you didn't expect to see, or just a strange face that, hey, this, look who came up for Dungy.
One guy fits that bill. Now, I was not surprised to see Lovie Smith. I was not shocked to see Leslie Frazier, who worked for Tony,
sure,
in Indianapolis. Jim Caldwell showed up. Tony's one of his mentors.
Yep. And he's a busy guy.
You know, but then I turn around and I see a blast from the past, Steve. And Catherine and I both were shocked. Joe Marciano, who used to be the special teams coach in Tampa a long time ago.
Sure.
This is before Rich Bisaccia and the Gruden days.
Sure, sure.
He's still working. I believe he's with the Lions now. He's a real gung-ho type. Didn't expect to see Joe. Hadn't seen him in 10 years. And I said, Joe, what are you doing here? And he said, out of respect for Coach Dungy. And that was the word that was thrown around all night long. Respect. And, of course, Dungy's speech, very respectful. And ended it in style, Steve, because he's a man who, when he had the podium, because he was a historic winner, make no mistake, you have to put the work in to get the podium.
Absolutely.
And when he had it, and other people have had it and not used it and disdained it, walked away from it, Dungy embraced it. And how did he end that speech? An homage to the coaches that came before him, and he's on their shoulders. That's classic Tony Dungy.
Yeah, it was everything you expected from Dungy in that speech. All right, it's been fun. Thanks, Ira. We will see you next time.
You've been listening to the Ira Kaufman Podcast on JoeBucksFan.com, brought to you by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon.